to go quick. Today's daf is Nida Kafav. We're going to start at the very bottom, the last two words of Kafhe Amubet, Sandal Ditnan. Okay, so remember we talked about the sandal, and we discussed that the sandal is a fetus that was in utero with another twin, and the twin kind of smushed it, and it ended up with either a totally flat face or a somewhat flat face, and is not viable anymore. So if it comes with another, basically, the assumption is there's a regular birth happening alongside it. So we tried to talk about yesterday some things about that, where they're going to continue and ask. Sandal ditnan gabei bechorot. In laws of bechorot, it says, if you look in Rashi, hamapelet sandal, haba acharav, bechor lanachala, ve'en bechor lekohen. So if you miscarry a sandal, so the one who comes after, and at this point the Gemara assumes what you mean is, if a year or 2 years later you give birth, since you already had a sandal, well, when it comes to nachala, so your new bechor will be the bechor for nachala because that one never survived. But when it comes to kohen, you're not going to do pidyon because it's not peterechem. It's not the first that came out of the womb. So if that's the case, lamai helchata, what do you need to say this for? Didn't the sandal come out with another one? So that one would be the peterechem. You wouldn't need to say, it wouldn't be a chidush that one was the peterechem, the sandal, because obviously its twin that was actually born was already the first. It's like a weird halacha, and would be the bechor for nachala, so it really makes no sense.
Stop for a second, yeah. Because if a sandal is necessarily defined by us as one that is born with the twin, that means that it stopped developing at one point and it can still carry it to 9 months so that it
Yes. The assumption is it carried, right? So that's
So that you can't talk about the same sandal that maybe was born at some sort of earlier...
Right, it seems, according to the Gemara, that a sandal is not... Right, you know, we know situations where a woman can miscarry one of the twins earlier on and one could still survive. But they didn't understand things that way. In other words, their understanding was that this sandal was, or at least what they call a sandal, was a particular type that basically would come out, one would be live and one wouldn't be, okay? We'll see later that maybe even both end up not surviving in certain situations, but that's what they're assuming is happening. But it's born at the same time, okay?
So maybe they're 7 or 9 months.
Yeah,
sundown,
exactly, exactly. Again, tough to know the reality of this, but that's what they assume this is. And maybe they didn't know the reality either, and they were just making an assumption that this theoretically could possibly happen, and maybe it never really happened. So what's Lamai Hilchata? Why do you need to tell us this? So what do they say? No, what they meant was leba acharav. In other words, if the sandal was born and immediately the other one was born, but the sandal came out first, bechor lenachala ve'en bechor lekohen. Right. So this one that comes out after, the one that was viable, becomes the bechor lenachala, but he's not the bechor lekohen because the sandal came out first. Sandal ditnan gabe kritut. So now we're going to have the exact same question in kritut. In kritut, they discuss who has to bring a korban. Okay, this is where we saw it also that in korban, so the woman who gives birth to a sandal needs to bring a korban yoledet. So again, lamai hilchata, isn't she bringing a korban yoledet for the other one? So why do they need to tell us this? So the reason is, she imteled vlad derech dofen, v'sandal derech rechem. Now we're going to get into two possible, a little bizarre cases, although one could theoretically have this, where one came out through a C-section, and then the regular one, and then the sandal came out through the rechem. Then you'd have to demaite korban a sandal. Now this assumes that you're of the opinion, there's machloket about this, if you have a C-section, do you not bring a korban yoledet? So assuming you don't bring a korban yoledet, then we would have needed the sandal, the halach of the sandal to teach us that you'd still have to bring the korban yoledet for the sandal. Ule Rabbi Shimon, da'amar, yotzei derech dofen, vlad ma'aliyu, according to Rabbi Shimon, who thinks that that's a real full-fledged vlad, and, oh, by the way, why would you say, if you give birth C-section, are you patur from korban? Because the pasuk says yishak ki tazriya v'yalda zachar, and then it goes on to say she has the tamei leidan, then it goes on to say she has to bring the korban. So they learn, because it says yishak ki tazriya, it's mimakom shemazrat, from the place where she got impregnated. So only if it comes out natural birth is she chayim. Does she need to bring the korban? So here, if you say, like Rabbi Shimon, though, that a vlad derech dofen is a regular birth, and you have to bring a korban. So mayi kalamemar. So again, you're stuck with what's the chidush of the sandal. She's obviously bringing a korban for the other vlad. Rabbi Yirmiyah, she'im teleh vlad biyota ovedet kochavim. Here's a really crazy case. She gives birth to the vlad while she's still in ovedet kochavim. What happens? She's about to convert. While she's in the process of converting, she is about to dunk in the mikveh. Baby one comes out. She continues to dunk in the mikvah. And then the sandal comes out, la'achar shenitgaira. Okay, and then the sandal comes out after the conversion. Then, chidush is demaita korban asandal, because when you give birth, when you're an obed kochavim, you're not chayav a korban. Okay, this is obviously a very crazy case. And in fact, okay, we're not going to see, not only is this a crazy case, but the Gemara is going to now suggest, or the rabbis came in front of Rav Papa, suggested that all three of these answers, okay, the first answer was with the Bechor, that the sandal came out and then the vlog came out. Then with the Kritu cases, with the Korban, we're going to assume the vlog came out first, the reverse, okay, the reverse order, the vlog came out first, and then the sandal, and either one derech dof and one derech rechem, one C-section, one regular birth, or before she converted, after she converted. So now, Amarua Rabbanan Kameh Rav Papa, they said the following in front of Rav Papa, well, these answers. They said in front of Rav Papa about these answers. Umi idlu lahani shinuye. Could these really possibly happen? Now, why are they going to say they can't happen? Because they had a belief about how this birth would come about. V'hatanya, doesn't the Braita say, k'shehen yotzin, ein yotzin ela kruchin? When a sandal comes out with a regular birth, with a regular fetus, so they come out intertwined. Now, if they come out intertwined, it can't possibly be that one was born before the other. So again, remember in the first case of Bechor, we had the sandal coming out first. And in the Kritut answers, we had the vlog coming out first. So Amar Papa, Shmamina, we have to infer from here the fact that we gave these answers, and there has to be some nafkamina here. Mikrach karechle vlad le sandal apalge. They're attached at the center, but umishal chifle klapik reshe. What does that mean? That he gets pushed in front of the head. In other words, what happens is they get intertwined, but the head of the sandal is by the legs of the other. They're attached, they're kind of not attached, but they're intertwined in the middle, and they're flipped. Okay, so the head of one is where the feet of the other are. So now we're going to describe how this works. Gabe Bechoro, now remember, by Bechor, who was born first? The sandal was born first. So that's why we said the next one is not Petar Rechem anymore. So how could that happen? Kigon shiatsu derech rasheihem, derech rasheihem, where the head, what it really means here is the head of the sandal came out first. Now, if you remember, we learned the head comes out first, or not first, but the head comes out, rove of the head comes out, that's already considered a birth. We saw that in Bechor and a bunch of places. So except for in what case? When the fetus isn't viable. But here, despite the fact that the fetus isn't viable, right, then you need rove of the body. But they're going to assume here, because yatsu derech rasheihem, de sandal kadim v'nafik. So the sandal came out first, so that was considered the first birth, and therefore, when the rest of the body came out of the other one, we got to rove of the body, already the sandal, the head had come out, and that was considered birth. Gabe kritu, we need the reverse case, obviously, right? Shiatsu derech margalotehem, the legs came out first of the sandal. Divlad kadim, in that case, the viable fetus came out first. Kadim v'nafik, it came out, right, went first and came out first. Now that was the first answer. Rav Huna bar Tachlifa mishmei derav amar afilu tema mitzumtzumim. He says you could say theoretically they both came out at exactly the same time, both in the same direction. But now, based on something I mentioned a minute ago, it'll make sense. V'ipuch shmatata. Now you have to flip which way they came out from the previous answer. Gabe v'cholot it shiatsu derech margalotehen. Why? Vlad. Now you have to understand. So they're coming out legs first. Okay. So first of all, legs first is always harder birth that way. So what's going to happen? The vlad di'ipe chiyuta sarech velo nafik. The vlad that still has life in him, so as it's going out, what's going to happen? The arms are going to kind of get in the way and prevent it from coming out because it's still alive. But the sandal, sorry, I lost my place, velo nafik, sandal di'ipe chiyuta sarech velo nafik. It's just going to kind of slip out because it doesn't have anything, right? There's no life in it preventing it from getting out, so it'll just slide right out. And therefore, the sandal will end up coming out first. Gabe kritut, what do we want? We want the case where the other one comes out first. Well, now it's very easy based on what we said earlier. Shiatsu derech rashehen, and since vlad ibe chiyuta midinafik reshe havyaleda sandal adinafik rube. In that case, we go back to what I suggested, why I said it's weird they don't say that, which is once rove rosho comes out of a viable fetus, then already it's considered a birth. So even though both their heads came out exactly the same time, the one that stays alive, that's considered birth. For the sandal, which is dead, only once rov comes out is it considered its birth, and therefore they came at exactly the same moment. However, halachically, one came out before the other. It's an interesting halachic reality kind of thing. Okay, Mishnah. Shiliyah bebayit, habayit tameh. If you have a shiliyah, an afterbirth, in the house, right, which could be like a placenta or maybe something else that comes out after the birth, if it's in the house, the bayit is tameh because we assume that ein shiliyah, right, this is a case where the woman gave birth and there was, and she gives birth to a shiliyah and there's no vlad. Okay, we don't have a vlad. We assume that there's a vlad in the, that there's no, okay, so I'll just read on for one more minute and then we'll explain. Lo shash shiliyah vlad. We don't assume that the placenta is a vlad. Ela she'en shiliyah below vlad. There's no possibility to have an afterbirth without, afterbirth means afterbirth. There had to have been a birth. We assume there was a vlad and we just don't, you know, we don't see it or, you know, and it was dead and it's in the shiliyah or attached to the shiliyah. And, but it's there. We just don't, you know, we can't identify it. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Nimo Kavlad Ad Shelo Yatza. Yes, there's an afterbirth, but it could be that the vlad already was kind of disintegrated inside the body, turned into blood. Now all this blood came out with the woman in the woman with the woman's body, and the blood that was the vlad is already batel to the rest of the blood, and we don't consider it tumat mate. Okay, so according to Tanakama, it's mamash tumat mate. Okay, it's as if there's a mate in the body. Tanu Rabbanan, now they're gonna have a description about how to identify what a shiliyah looks like. It's a little bit, there's a few different interpretations of how exactly we read this. Rashi's interpretation is that it's not stages. Like one could say maybe this is stages. We'll go with Rashi, who describes this as different sides of the shiliyah. Shiliyah tchilata domeh l'chut shel erev. Okay, it's like the chutim of the, I was confused, the terms, the warp? No, the woof. Okay, thanks. The shiliyah is like those strands of the woof, which we said are the ones that are in the loom already, right, and not the ones that you bring in, and they're thin but strong. V'sofa domeh ketorm, which the other side is like a lupine, which is thicker. V'chalula kechatotzra, and it's hollow like a trumpet. V'ein shiliyah, it's interesting analogies, but they're comparing these, right, three totally different things. V'ein shiliyah pruta mitefach. In order for us, it doesn't mean there is no such thing as a shiliyah that's less than a tefach, but in order to say it carries with it a vlad, it has to be a minimum size of a tefach, which is the width of four fingers. Okay. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, shiliyah domeh lekor kivan shel tarnegolin, shadakin yotzim mimena. Okay, it's like the crop of the rooster, where the innards come out from it. Okay, it's, again, this is very helpful to them about what the size is, not so helpful to us who don't really recognize these sizes. But he disagrees about the tefach. Tanya, okay, I think most people think it's a smaller shiur, even less than a tefach. Tanya, Rabbi Yoshaya Ze'era Demin Chavraya. Okay, before we even go on, I want to point out something about his name. He's Rabbi Yoshaya, and he's mentioned as he's the youngest of his friends. This shows us, again, we saw the other day how Rav Shimi, the grandson of Rav, was able to ask questions against Rav, even though he was his grandson, and Rav was this great Talmid Chacham. It's in the Gemara, you're allowed in different, right, even the youngest. Here we see the youngest of the whole Chevra. He was the one who gave this halacha, and people listened to him, you know, and there was respect. So anyway, he says the following thing, which was going to create a whole sugya out of it, which is chamisha shiurin tefach. We always have an issue when someone gives a number. Why that number? Why not more? What about other cases? He says there's five cases where we have the shiur of a tefach. Ve'eluhen, and here are the five. Shiliyah, that's the one we learned. Shofar, shidra, dofen sukkah, v'ha'ezov. So now we're going to go through the five. Shiliyah, hadamaran. That's what we just said. It has to be a tefach in order to have tumat meit, and that's according to Tanakama. Shofar, d'tanya, kama yehesh shi'or shofar, peresh Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, kedei shi'achzenu biyado v'yera'et lekan ulekan tefach. The tefach of a shofar is not that the shofar itself has to be a tefach, so when you hold it, you have to be able to see a tefach on either side, which I think shows something interesting. It shows that people have to actually see the shofar. You always think of shofar as hearing, and here they're saying there's also something to seeing it, because otherwise, what would it matter if you don't, if, as long as it's a tefach, what's the difference if his hands cover the whole thing? So you see there's some issue of also being able to see the shofar, and therefore there has to be a tefach on either side. So that's shofar. Shidra mahi, the Amarabi Parnach, Amarabi Yochanan, Shidro Shelulav. Okay, we're not talking about someone's back vertebrae. We're talking about the spine of the lulav. Okay, meaning not the leaves of the lulav at the top, it's really just leaves, but the spine of it, tzarich shehe yotze min ha'adas tefach. It has to be taller than the hadasim by a tefach. So if you have really nice hadasim and they're really tall, that's not a good thing, right? They have to, your lulav has to stick out a tefach. Dofen sukkah, detanya. So now, what about the dofen of a sukkah, tefach? That sounds weird. A wall of a sukkah is only a tefach. Well, detanya, shtayin kilchatam. Two of them have to be kahalacha, which is seven tefachim. Very small, by the way, right? Walls of a sukkah have to be minimum seven tefachim. Okay, seven hands breadths, right? But shlishit, the third one, afilu tefach, can be just a tefach. That's enough. Ezov. What's the ezov? Detanya, Rabbi Chiya, ezov tefach. Okay, Rabbi Chiya brings a braita that says, Ezov is a tefach. What's the Ezov? The Ezov was that the hyssop branch that they would dip into the blood for the Metzorah, to sprinkle the blood on the Metzorah, and for the Paraduma waters, the Mechatat, where people would become purified, they would also dip the Ezov into those waters and sprinkle it on the person who is Tamei Meit. So that also has to be a tefach. So Amar Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, Darish Shila Ish Kfar Tamrata, that he says now that Shila, the man from the Kfar Tamrata, said, Tlat matnita v'tarte shmatita shira tefach. There's three braitot and two statements of Emoraim that all say the shira is a tefach. In other words, he goes back and looks at those five and says, three are braitot and two are said by Emoraim. Well, if you look back, you'll see it's not exactly accurate. Tarte, two are said by Emoraim, chadehi, only one is. Okay, so Amar Abaye, Ema Amar Rabbi Chiya, Ezov Tefach. The last one was that Rabbi Chiya brought a braita. So they thought that was a braita. So they say, oh, change it. It's not that Rabbi Chiya brought a braita. Rabbi Chiya was right in the generation that turned over from Tanaim to Amoraim. And he said, Ezov is a Tefach, and not that he said it from a braita. So there you have it, to Amoraim, they changed that. Okay, that was a minor thing. Now we're going to get into, are there really only five things that have a shiur of a tefach? Don't we know all sorts of other halachot? Now, you'd be surprised, these aren't the ones you might have thought of. First of all, they don't mention tefach v'ish erba, okay? First of all. V'ha'ika, tefach al tefach al hum tefach meruba, okay? One tefach by one tefach by one tefach squared, basically. Mevi et ha'tum'ah v'chotzeitz b'fnei ha'tum'ah. If you have a little teeny ohel, what's the shear of an ohel to be able to say there's tum'at mate in the ohel, that if there's a kezayit of a mate in this space, everything in that space is going to be tameh? It has to be one by one by one tefach, okay? It has to have that amount of space. If not, it's not going to be. And chotzeitz b'fnei ha'tum'ah, which means, if you remember, tum'ah goes up to the sky unless it has a roof over it. So the roof that blocks it from going up further is tefach al tefach berum tefach. So there you have a tefach. So what are they going to answer? Tefach kamrinan, tefach al tefach lo kamrinan. In this list, what was he mentioning? Things that are just a tefach, but not a tefach squared. Okay? V'ha'ika even hayotze min atanur tefach, u'min akira shalosh etzbaot chibur. Okay, now we're getting into laws of, that was tumah meit, now we're talking about tumah of kelim. So if you have an oven or burners that have a handle on them, so handles are considered part of the item itself, and therefore if tumah gets on the handle, everything will be tameh. In other words, it's considered chibur. Likewise, if the tanur becomes tameh, so will the handle. But there's a certain shi'ur for this. Why? If it juts out a tefach, or from kirayim, if it's three etzbaot, then it's considered connected. Why? If it's any bigger than that, we'll say, oh, they'll probably remove it because it sticks out too much. Okay, we'll get into more detail even later, but that's the assumption here. So what do you see here? Here you have another shiur of a tefach. So the Gemara answers, oh, this tefach is different from all the other tefachs. Why? Because everything else we said under a tefach is not the shiur. It's only tefach and more, like the dofen of a sukkah and the ezov. It has to be minimum. This is the opposite. It has to be tefach or under. Right, any greater than a tefach, already it's not going to be chibur because there's an assumption that that handle is going to come right off. So ki kamrin an hecha de b'tzir mi tefach lo chaze. We're only giving shirim where tefach is the minimum. It has to be at least a tefach. Aval hacha kol shekein de b'tzir mi tefach yad tanur hu. But in this case, for sure, less than a tefach is going to be considered connected to the tanur. Okay, next case, and here we're going to learn some reality about what happened in the time of the Gemara. V'ha'ika tanurei banot tefach. Okay, what is this? Tanure banot are, okay, like little tykes existed in those days. Okay, little toy ovens that the girls had. Okay, girls play with dolls, not boys, right? Girls play with ovens, not boys. So what's the assumption? These girls used to have these little teeny toy ovens. And the minimum size, now what are we talking about? Size for what, right? We're not talking about size for toy makers. We're talking about the size for when the kli is considered ra'oy lekabel tum'ah. In order for it to be ra'oy lekabel tum'ah, it has to be an amount that's significant. So when it comes to tanurei banot, the shear is a tefach. How do we know this? It should be ditnan, as it says in the Mishnah in Kelim. Tanur tchilato arba'a v'shiarav arba'a divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay. Now we're talking about a regular oven. Okay, we'll get to the tanurei banot. In order to say this oven is mekabel tuma, it has to be at least when it was created 4 tefachim. Okay, so that's the shiur. Shiarav. Let's say it breaks. Okay, let's say a tanur that is tamei and then breaks, so it no longer is tamei anymore because it's not a kli anymore. But if it still has 4 tefachim, if it's still 4 tefachim in size. Once it broke, that amount that's still 4 tefachim is still going to be considered a kli. Okay, so that's what it means. It's tchilato arba'a in the beginning when you create, and what's left over. Bechachamim omrim, bamed varim amorim begadol. That's only in a tanur gadol, like a regular tanur. Aval bekatan, tchilato kolshehu. But a katan, which we're going to see, is the girl that the girls used to play with. From the beginning, as long as it's any size, we're going to see kolshu doesn't always mean any size. Kolshu, we're going to explain, is a tefach. What? Okay, kolshu doesn't always mean any little teeny thing. But tchilato kolshu, which we'll explain in a minute, is a tefach. Misha tigmar melachto, as long as it's already created. In other words, while someone's building it, so then even when it's a kolshu, it's not going to be considered. It's only once it's finished, but as long as it's a minimum of a tefach. V'shiarav berubo, and if it breaks, and there's only part of it left, as long as rove of that tefach is left, then we can be consider it as still a kli, that it's tameh. Vekama kol shehu. So now that was the Mishnah. Now the bright, now they say about this, the Amoraim say, how much is kol shehu? Amar Rabbi Yanai tefach. How do we know that now the small, so the truth is, I shouldn't even say, Chachamim weren't necessarily talking, we don't know what they were talking about when they said small oven. But now he says, how do I know that a small oven can be a tefach? Shekein osim tanurei banot tefach, because there are tanurei banot that they make that are a tefach, and therefore we can assume that it must be talking about a tefach, because that's the smallest oven that we know of. So what do you see here? That Rabbi Meir says a tanur has to be 4 tefachim, but Chachamim say a tefach, because the tanurei banot were a tefach. So now going back to our question, why didn't we mention tanurei banot have tumah, right? There can be makabel tumah already at a tefach. So the answer is, this list didn't include things that mipluta lo kamayre, issues that are under machloket. Okay, if there's a machloket about them, then it didn't mention. It only mentioned things that everybody agrees are a tefach. So now they say, wait, if you're giving that answer, we could have answered that in the previous question. Ha shedati lahachi, ha nami plugtahi. Also the issue about the handle of the oven also was a source of machloket. So we could have just answered there instead of saying that we didn't say it there because the shear goes in the wrong direction, right? That under a tefach is actually the same as a tefach rather than all the other shearing that's tefach and above. But we could have answered that that's also a source of machloket. How do we know it's a source of machloket? Dekatani seifa, as it says at the end there, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, lo amaru tefach ela mina tanur v'lakotel. He said this tefach is only, in other words, it has to be, it can't be larger than a tefach, is only if, here you're going to learn also about their houses were very small. So if you had your tanur up against the wall and the handle was jutting out to the wall, then you can't put your oven smack up against the wall. So therefore, if it's a tefach, we assume it's close enough to the wall. But if it juts out more than a tefach, then you're going to remove that handle. I don't know why they didn't think just you'll turn it around, but comes Rabbi Yehuda and he says it depends where it's located. Okay, Tanakama didn't say this. Tanakama says it's always tefach. But he said if it's up against the wall, then we're going to assume you're going to take it down if it's more than a tefach. But if it's jutting into the house, then we're not really concerned that space is going to get in your way. And then, even if it's longer than a tefach, we're still going to consider it a handle, and it'll still be tameh with the oven. So therefore, here you see this is also a source of machloket, because only Rabbi Yehuda said that. And therefore, you could have answered that, in that case also, that it's a source of machloket. V'ha'ikam nizgeret tefach. If you remember, we learned about the shulchan in the Beit HaMikdash. It had where they put the lechem apanim. It had a frame that went around it. It's made of gold, and it went up a tefach. The height was a tefach. So why don't you say it? The mizgeret's a tefach. So they said, ha-biktivan lo kamayri. We're not talking about things that were explicitly written in the Torah. That says in the Torah, the mizgeret is a tefach high. We didn't need to tell you that. V'ha'ika kapora tefach. But what about the kaporet that covered the aron? That also had a thickness of a tefach, and that wasn't mentioned in the Torah. Okay, that was learned out by the rabbis. Bekodshim lo kamayre, we're not dealing with kodshim. Okay, those are things Beit HaMikdash related, which, by the way, you could obviously have then answered to the Shulchan also. Vaha'ika, okay, so fine. You don't want something written in the Torah. How about this one? Dayala korah shehi rechava tefach. What's this? This is laws of carrying on Shabbat. So if you have what's called a mavoy is an alleyway, right, which is open fully on one side, in order to be able to carry in that mavoy. So really you can carry in the mavoy, but since it opens into the public thoroughfare, there's a Rashut Arabim, there's a concern that people will think that you carry Rashut Arabim. So they don't allow you to carry in the mavoy unless you put up either a lechi, which is a horizontal beam, or a korah, which is a vertical beam, standing up right next to the entranceway. How big does your, how thick does it need to be? Rechava tefach, a tefach. So what do you see here? There's a perfect halacha, tefach. Why is that not mentioned? So what do they answer? Bidrabanan lo kamayre. They weren't dealing with, that's only a halacha midrabanan. Mida oraita, you can actually carry in the mavoy. You don't need, so yeah, I see you're laughing, because you'll see. So now what do they say? So here comes our summary sentence. Ela biktivan v'lo mefarshe shiurayu. They have to, because first we said, oh, that was written in the Torah, so we didn't need that one. So now, and this one they say, oh, well, this one's d'rabanan. So what's the in-between? It has to be something that the halacha is based in the Torah, but it didn't explain the shiur, and he came to say, these are the five that the shiur is explained. You know, I'm going to explain what's the shiur according to the Torah for this item. Okay, which would have been good also for the kaporet, but the kaporet is kachim, so it's not kachim. And there's no machloket about them. Okay, so we finally get to that. Okay. Yativ Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta kamei de Rav Kana. Now we're getting back. We had a nice tangent away from our shiliot and afterbirths. Now we're getting back to them. So Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta was sitting before Rav Kahana. Okay, try to remember the people because we're going to have a lot of back and forth with people here. So he was sitting in front of Rav Kahana. V'yativ v'ka'amach. And he sat and he said the following halacha, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. He said the following halacha in the name of Rav Yehuda, in the name of Rav. Kol shlosha yamim arishonim, tolim et ha-shiliya b'vlad. Mikam v'elach, choshishin l'vlad. If you have a birth, and then the shiliya comes out, there's an afterbirth within 3 days of the birth, we're going to assume that there wasn't another Vlad, but that the shiliya came with that birth. Okay, that basically means, right, something within 3 days it might come out. But mikam va'elach, after 3 days, choshishin la'vlad, we're concerned there maybe was another Vlad inside that just didn't come out in the birth because it was dead, and maybe because of that it didn't come out. If the shiliya then comes out after 3 days, we're going to assume there's a new Vlad. So choshishin la'vlad acher. So Amar Leh, so again, this is what Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta said to Rav Kahana in the name of Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. So now comes Rav Kahana and he says, Amar Leh, umi amar Rav hachi, did Rav really say this? V'hama Rav, ain havlad b'takei v'char chaviro klum. Didn't Rav say that a vlad all comes, if there's a vlad in there, this is like the sandal, right? It's going to come out right away. Which means if the shiliya comes out after, we can't assume that there's some other vlad that's coming out, even if it's 3 days later. It sounds like, according to Rav, there's no vlad that gets left behind, basically. So, ishtik. He didn't know what to say. Rav Yitzchak bar Marta, he was silent. So, he was silent, but Rav Kahana pipes in, even though he asked the question, he says, Amar Leh, Dilma, okay, there's going to be a bit of a weird thing going on here. So first of all, he asked the question, then he answered himself. Okay, that happens a lot. Dilma kan bedefel kan beben kayama. He says, maybe there's a difference if the first one, okay, now remember, Rav said the Vlad never stays in longer, right? So he's saying maybe that statement of Rav saying the vlad never stays in longer, that's if the first vlad was a ben kayama, was a survive, right? Viable. If the first one is viable and it's a real birth, then nothing else is going to stay inside. And that's what he meant his statement for. But when Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, the first 3 days, we assume it came from the vlad. But after that, choshashim, that there's another vlad, that was when she gave birth to a nephel, to a baby that wasn't going to be viable. It wasn't viable. So he suggests maybe that's the answer. And now all of a sudden, pipes in Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Martin. He says, you think maybe this is what Rav said? Beferish Amar Rav. Rav explicitly said, Hachi, just that. He pila nefel, v'achar kach he pila shilia. Right? If first she gives birth to a non-viable fetus, and then a shilia comes out in afterbirth, kol shlosha yamim tolin kashilia bivlad. Mikam ba'elef, kol shashin livlad acher. It depends on the timing, 3 days or not 3 days. But yalda, but if she really had a real birth, v'achar kach he pila shilia, even 10 days later. Right? That's always a way of saying any time after. Right? Obviously, not 9 months later or something, but any time later, we're not going to be choshesh levlad. So basically, we have this weird discussion where, again, Rav Yitzchak first says, you know, he makes this halacha. He gets questioned by Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana provides a potential answer. And then the first guy who didn't have an answer originally says, oh yeah, Rav, why are you saying, maybe that's what Rav said. Rav said that explicitly. Now maybe he remembered it, right? This happens. It jogged his memory and he all of a sudden remembered that that was the case. Could be also he was ignoring his question, possibly. And, you know, and then he didn't like that when he got smart, you know, and he said, here's my suggestion. He wanted to kind of knock him down and say, what kind of a suggestion is that, you know, instead of saying Baruch Shekivanta, which is what we would normally say in a nice way, like, oh, how nice that you thought of exactly what Rav said, he was not being so nice about it. And he said, you know, what do you mean? Rav actually said it. Don't try to make up answers for Rav. Rav really said that. Okay, and almost like, why didn't you know that Rav said this? Now remember this theme, because it's going to come up at the end of the daf also. Shmuel, the Talmidei de Rav, and Rav Yehuda. Now we have another story. Shmuel, the Talmidim of Rav and Rav Yehuda. Now remember the relationship between Shmuel and Rav. Shmuel and Rav were big Talmidei Chachamim, right? At the same time, the first generation. Rav dies before Shmuel, and then Shmuel takes over Rav's yeshiva. That's why Rav Yehuda is always giving over things in the name of Rav and the name of Shmuel. First he learned with Rav. After Rav's death, he learns with Shmuel. So, and Rav Yehuda was Shmuel's into, like, what Rav said, because Shmuel obviously wasn't teaching in the same yeshiva as Rav. He didn't know all of Rav's statements. So he kind of relied on Rav Yehuda to tell him what Rav said. So Shmuel, the students of Rav, and Rav Yehuda, who was obviously one of the students of Rav, but they're specifically pointing out he was there, Habu Yatve, they were sitting together, Chalifa Azar Rav Yosef Bered Rav Menashe Midvil. Okay, this guy, Rav Yosef, the son of Rav Menashe from Dvil, passes by La Payu in front of them. Bale Va'ate, he's running by them. Amar, so somebody says, it's not clear who says, whether Shmuel said it, or Rav Yehuda said it, or one of the students said it. Somebody says about him, Ate lan gavra de ramina le begila de chitita. Umirme umadche. Here's a guy, okay, they look at him and they point to him in a not nice way, and they say, here's a guy that makes these statements, and we can, like, ask a question that's like straw, like nothing, and he won't know how to answer it. Now, it's not a great Talmid Chacham, basically. We can knock him out. So, Adahachi Ata, in the meanwhile, right, he ran by them, they made the statement about him, and then eventually he comes back to the Beit Midrash. Amar Le Shmuel, and then Shmuel, I guess he wanted to check. Okay, we've seen this a bunch of times in our Masechet, where they kind of want to check, is it really true? So he decides to ask him a question. That's a tricky question. So Amar Le Shmuel, my Amar Rav b'Shilia. What did Rav say about the Shilia? Amar Le, Hachi Amar Rav. Now remember what Rav said before we move on. Rav said, according to what we said, how did we start? We have Rav Yitzchak Bar Marta, who said in the name of Rav Yehuda, who said in the name of Rav, that 3 days, right, if it's born within 3 days, it's then we assume it's kashur, the original vlad. And if it's after 3 days, we assume that there was a vlad there that died, and we're going to have to count it as a new vlad. Again, what does that mean? It means we're counting the days, right? There's all sorts of ramifications. So What does he say? Rav says, it was a statement that's not so clear what it means. Ain tol. So he says, this is what Rav said. Ain tolim et hashiliyah ela b'davar shel kayama, which sounds like a shiliyah can only come from, there can only be an afterbirth if there was a real kayama, okay, like a real baby there. Okay, which means that we don't ever, okay, again, there's a bit of a debate about how to read this. Okay, I'm gonna go with the Rashba's explanation and not Rashi. Rashi complicates things a little and makes some distinctions between fetuses that never made it, that could have potentially been viable, but something went wrong, or were never viable, right? There's two ways you can miscarry. Either the embryo was never a way that could have ever survived, or it could have survived, but something happened in the process and it didn't. So Rashi gets complicated like that. I'm going to keep it simple with the Rashba. The Rashba says, his explanation of this, and it's interesting, we'll see after, I want to read you a passage in the Beit Yosef about this. The Rashba says that he basically goes against what Rav Yehuda said. Rav Yehuda said, right after 3 days, we can already assume it was some other vlad. And he basically says, the shiliyah only comes with a vlad shel kayama. You're not going to have an afterbirth after some sort of miscarriage if there was a vlad, right? If there was a real, and if there was a real birth, and then after you see something, we're always going to assume it came from the kayama. Okay? So it seems to go against what Rav Yehuda said, according to the Rashba. According to Rashi, it doesn't actually go totally against him. It's talking about a little something different, but we'll stick with the Rashba right now. Now, so this is like a new thing, especially if we read this sugya as he went against what Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav. So, Shailinu Shmuel Achol Tamidei Derav. So now Shmuel, again, they said negative things about this guy, so he assumed that this guy was all off, and he didn't have Rav right, especially Rav Yehuda had said something else in the name of Rav. So he asked all the Talmidim of Rav. Remember who was there? There were the Talmidim of Rav and Rav Yehuda. So he asked all the Talmidim of Rav, Va'amrele Hachi. And they said, yeah, in fact, he's right. That's what Rav said. So Hadar Chazye LeRav Yehuda Bishut. He now looks at Rav Yehuda and says, how could you not have told me that Rav said that? Okay, like Bishut is embarrassment, right? He looks at Rav Yehuda in embarrassment. Rav Yehuda, now according to the Rashba, it was also embarrassing because not only did Rav Yehuda not tell him that Rav said this, but Rav Yehuda passed down a different halacha in the name of Rav. And he basically says, you know, how could you possibly do this? So what exactly is going on with this Bishut? This Bishut is interesting. So what's really interesting is in the Beit Yosef, he quotes the Rashba, and he basically says here that what he complains to Rav Yehuda about, why did he say Bishut? Hainu mishum dilo eshtekach bebe midrasha ki hadar be'rav me'ahui. It must have been that Rav changed his mind, right? Rav originally said the first name, that Rav Yehuda said in his name, and then he changed his mind, and Shmuel was very angry at Rav Yehuda for not saying it. Now, why didn't Rav Yehuda say that Rav had changed his mind? Obviously, he must have not been in the Beit Midrash that day, and he must have not caught up, you know, like when you miss school, and your teacher says, you know, it's your responsibility to catch up. So he's very upset at Rav Yehuda, that Rav Yehuda didn't do his homework properly, and he missed that day, okay? And, right, Mishum Deka Amar Hatam B'Gemara, right? What do you see here? The Talmidei de Rav all said that's what Rav said. So obviously, right, that he said, and not only that, but theoretically, in the beginning of the story, they were all Mizalzel and this other guy, and they said, oh, this other guy doesn't know anything. And here, and it could be according to this reading, that Rav Yehuda was the one who said about this guy, he doesn't really know anything, and he gets it in his face because he, in the end, got humiliated for not having been in the Beit Midrash and not found out that Rav changed his mind. And what you see here is the danger of passing down the Masoret. That, you know, you miss a day and someone changes his mind and all of a sudden, you know, you could be passing down the wrong halachot. So that's the Rashba's explanation. Rashi has a whole different way of reading the sugya, but I thought that was a very interesting explanation. And it explains very well why he looked at him bibishut kazot. Okay. Next, where are we? Okay, Ba'amine Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul mi Rebbe. So now Yossi ben Shaul asks Rebbe a question. Now we're on another issue. Hamapelet dmut orev v'shilia. She gives birth to something that looks like a raven, and a shilia comes out. Mahu. Amar lei. Ein tolin ela b'davar sheyesh b'mino shilia k'shurabo. No, yesh b'mino shilia. An orev doesn't have an afterbirth. When an orev gives birth to another bird, there is no afterbirth. So therefore, we have to assume that it was actually a different fetus in there and not the orev. Then that's what the afterbirth was, not connected to the orev, because an orev never has it. kshura bomahu? What if the afterbirth was tied around the, you know, was connected to the orev? Amar le, davar she'eno sha'alta. You're asking something that would absolutely never happen. Okay, this is right. You wish they said this more in all these sugyas, right? These things seem very crazy. So now they say etive. Here, let's bring a question on this. Hamapelet, here's a brayta. Hamapelet min behema chayav ha'of. We saw this, right? But now we're getting a little bit of a difference from when we saw it before. If she's mapelet, something like a behema chayav an oaf, the oaf would be like our orev. Vishiliya imahen, okay, and the shiliya is with it. Bizman sha shiliya kshura imahen in choshishin levlad acher. Now notice what this says, that it could be that the shiliya is kshura. So this seems to contradict what he just said a minute ago, that it can't possibly be. Because here it says, if the shiliya is kshura, then we assume that it came from that. Ein shiliya kshura imahem, if it's not connected, then choshishin levlad acher. Hareini metil alehem chomer shnei vladot. And then you basically have to go to the most machmir, assuming, you know, the worst. Shani Omer, Shem Animoach Shvir Shel Shiliya, V'Nimoch Shiliya Shel Shvir. Because maybe, right, the Shvir, the sack of the Shiliya, meaning the fetus, got destroyed, or Shiliya Shel Shvir, or maybe the Shiliya, the afterbirth, kind of got, I don't know how you would define that, that the Shiliya Shel Shvir was Nimoch, you know, somehow they all got mushed up together and it got destroyed. So what do you see here? That it could possibly happen. So how could he have answered him not? To Yuvta. This source actually raises a question that maybe it really could have happened. Okay? Tov.